We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the pod. We actually have wins to talk about, Michael. I've been doing this podcast for a long time with you. I don't remember the last time we got to talk about wins. Do you remember talking about wins ever?
When remember that Twins commercial? That was popular. No. Bud Light? No. All right. Yeah, no, it's two, and I would say even one. That I like those games where you don't feel like you deserve to win, but you walk out with a win because there's so many where it goes the other way. Felt that way about the Charlotte game. I had no business winning that one, and we actually did, so that makes up for some of the crappy losses. So good times in Pelican Nation.
It was a Langston Galloway comeback. Guy was unstoppable, on fire.
You've seen the original Beetlejuice, right?
Yes.
Doesn't it look like Langston Galloway, like whatever the guy at the end of the movie took Kendrick Perkins' face and shrunk it, and that's Langston Galloway now?
I actually saw you say that on Twitter, and I kept thinking, he reminds me of someone, and that's exactly what it is. It's Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the scowl. He just kind of looks tired all the time.
Let me ask you something real quick before we get off Galloway. Where do you fall on the hot hand kind of philosophy? Like, Langston Galloway gets you back in that game with three-point shooting, but then sometimes I feel like they go overboard. Like, he got him back in that game. The game was tied or within one with, like, 3 minutes to go, and then they just kept drawing up plays with him until he would miss, which, of course, he eventually did. Would that be you as a coach? Would you just keep going to the hot hand even if he's a vastly inferior player to your superstar, or do you just think the hot hand forgetting you there, but then the final 3 minutes you're drawing up plays for AD and Drew?
I'm drawing up plays for AD and Drew, but I would say, while I don't believe in the hot hand, that just because you've hit like a couple in a row, suddenly you're going to hit the next couple in the row, but if the reason why you're hitting them is because you're the person guarding you is unable to stay with you and set, so you're getting open shots, which was the case with Galloway. Do you remember any Galloway shot that wasn't pretty open? They weren't guarding him very well.
I mean, until the, I mean, we just kept starting to run him around screens, and he had that little mid-range, pretty much air ball, that brought the get the ball to Langston Galloway sequence to an end. I thought that was curious, and I just wondered where you landed on that. I appreciate the guy getting us back in it, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't care who has the hot hand. I'm still going to Drew and AD for the final 3 minutes if the game is close. But they won, and overall it was a good week. You and I think both predicted 1-2. They went 2-1, and of course the Orlando game is the one they lose.
Right. The one that they should have had the best chance to have in the bag. They lost, and of course it's just because of an injury. And I'll be honest, I was really, really irritated when I saw that Davis was going to be sitting out the game when we knew Drew was coming. I'm like, this is the winnable one. This is the one that we should just bank and then move on and then see how Drew works out. And oh, the week is ruined. I was so annoyed. And then they went and won a back to back. So I should have just shut up and get my, and you know, supported my team.
So we'll just go through it because it was obviously the low light of the week, both from an entertainment and a win-loss standpoint. Magic game, anything you took away from that? Did you even care? Does it matter at all? Any good, any bad?
Well, Terrence Jones is just a beast. So you keep saying this is actually the one, there's only one relevant thing I would say. When I was watching that game that actually came to mind, you keep saying what we need is like an offensive big man, like the guy you go out who can't really do much else defensively. You go out and get that guy like Vucevic or Kanter. Is it possible that Terrence Jones is that guy?
You know, what's funny is when I wrote that article, somebody in the comments section said, why do we need to go out and get him? We have a Ginza. And they were not joking. No, I mean, there's a different level. So there's two questions. Can Terrence Jones score? Sure. But I'm talking about guys like Zach Randolph and Enes Kanter, and there's definitely a level difference between those guys. But yeah, you put Terrence Jones on a court with a, you know, with a bunch of other guys who can't score, and, you know, your team's going to get 80 to 90 points somehow. So yeah, he'll put up some stats, but no, he's not a guy that I would feel comfortable being the go-to guy in any unit. I mean, think about it. We've seen him score some this year. He's putting up about 10 points a game. What would you say in what area of the court or what type of offensive possession would you say, yep, Terrence Jones does that above average? Because I wouldn't say low post offense. I wouldn't say mid-range jumper. I wouldn't say three-point shot. I wouldn't say isolation drive into the bat. I don't think there's one offensive thing that he does above average where you say, hey, go get me a bucket, and he's going to do it 7 out of 10 times in this one situation. Would you say that there's anything offensively that he does above average as far as scoring, any type of possession?
I actually would have said he was a fairly decent low post scorer. If he catches it down low, he's not bad. I feel comfortable with him taking hook shots around the rim. I think he has a pretty decent conversion rate. I need to, now that you've said that, I'm going to have to go take a look at the stats and see which of us is probably more accurate. But I would say I'm not saying like you give him the ball and I expect him to score it all the time. But I feel comfortable with him taking the shot. Unlike when he catches the ball at the three-point line and no one bothers to guard him, the next event is not a good thing. No matter what, what's happening next is bad. But if he catches the ball right around the basket and is moving on one guy, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, but you just use words like not bad, fine. My whole point with that second string guy was I was talking about guys like Zach Randolph. I was talking about guys who had exceptional offensive skill, not bad.
Okay.
I know that as Pelicans fans, like not bad gets us excited. But no, I was talking about top line exceptional, because I do think that as this team gets guys back, they're actually going to have some, you know, pretty good talent on the second unit now. So no, if I'm going to entrust an entire offense and build it around a guy, he better be not bad, and, you know, all those other glorious adjectives you used to describe Terrence Jones just now.
Yeah, here's the one thing I do really want to get out there. I can't wait until the first article comes out from somebody somewhere, you know, like at some sort of fan-sided or someplace like that, where they talk about how they take his block and steal rates and then talk about how he's a good defender. I can't wait for that to happen. I know it's coming. Because he's actually, like, you look at his block and steal rates, they're very good for a power forward, and they're elite for, like, any sort of small forward. So, like, he's like, got amazing numbers there. But, oh my God, like, there has been multiple times on a pick and roll where he moves to cut off the guy who's driving. They drop the ball to his man, and he just watches as they don't even, like, run past him. They kind of dribble past him, do a little shimmy, couple backflips, dunk the ball, and he hasn't taken a step yet. He's just watching. He doesn't even swipe. It's not like he's not like trying to knock the ball loose. Like Ryan Anderson would at least like follow the guy and then maybe swipe at the ball. Eric Gordon would do that. Like Jones is just like, hey, that dude's going somewhere. Well, I'll let me watch.
Yeah, I got a little bit of flack from couple people in our little community. You actually know him, and Twitter and Kumar and some of the other people who write for our site who are very smart, but I firmly believe that Terrence Jones is a worse defensive player than Ryan Anderson. And of course, for the casual fan or the, you know, the person who doesn't watch as obsessively as some of us, that's going to sound insane because Ryan Anderson doesn't swat shots and he doesn't get steals, but like I wrote in my piece today, over the course of 500 possessions, Terrence Jones is going to get about 10 blocks and he'll get a couple of steals, but on the other 485 possessions, he will be in worse position than Ryan Anderson. He will give less effort. He will communicate less. It's just, I think it's between him and Ajinta as the worst Pelicans defender I've seen in the last 5 to 8 years. But he does come up with the plays that, again, a blocked shot starts a break. And if you're just a casual basketball fan and you're not watching him off ball, or something that drives me nuts about him is watch him on a free throw. He doesn't even try to box out the guy. He stands there and watches and assumes it goes in. Like, there's just little things that I guess being an ex-coach drive me nuts, and he does a lot of them. I fully think he's giving us more value than the $1 million that he's being paid on the minimum contract, but I'm already starting to see people saying, you know, oh man, I hope we could keep him for next year, and I hope $8, $10, $12 million a year will be enough. I do not feel that way at all. I hope this is a one and done, repair his value a little bit. He could go get, you know, a nice little contract somewhere else, but I could not see spending, you know, tying up any real money in this guy. And last thing before you comment on what I said, he is 5 for 11 on his hook shot this year.
5 for 11. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not bad, just as you had gloriously described. But how about you? If he plays exactly like this, let's say this is him, good, bad, and ugly for the entire year, do you want a 3-4 year contract going his way? And if so, at what price? Do you want him as a future part of this team?
I mean, I wouldn't be upset if they gave him a 3 or 4 year contract, as long as we're talking something like $4 or $5 million a year. Like, if we give him the equivalent of what Dante Cunningham got on the old scale, I'm perfectly fine with that. He's better than Dante Cunningham. So, fine.
Yeah, but, I mean, you've studied free agent markets long enough.
Yeah.
If he's putting up 15 to 17 points per 36 and yada, I mean, he'll get paid more than that on the market, right?
I don't know. How much did Mo Spates get paid?
He didn't get paid anything.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
he
went
right.
to a
Most
contender.
Spades, yeah, he went to the Clippers for nothing. That's right. I forgot about that. So that's the kind of
right.
player
so,
I think Terrence Jones is.
Yeah. I mean, he'll still be, you know, just turned 25 when he hits free agency. And I don't know. I think, you know, he's going to get something. If he plays exactly like this, it'd be more in the $7 to $10 million range, and just would be something I wouldn't want
okay.
to do.
I'd be willing to give him $7 million for a year.
Yeah, I mean, remember he's going to be using cap space,
mm-hmm.
and you know, Drew. Basically, you are going to have some cap space before you sign. You know, you re-sign Drew. So,
right.
I don't know. I would, again, I would rather seek out other things and see if I could go grab a real small forward, because as we talk about this week, all the good things that we have, man, that small forward position is still an absolute tire fire, and I would want to poke my feet into the water and see if I could get one of those first, and then if I can't get anything, sure, I'll bring Terrence Jones back for another year and see who I could get next year's free agency. But man, that small forward position is just, it's an embarrassment.
All right, so I'm gonna put you on the spot.
Uh-oh.
You have to play one of these two guys. It is for five minutes. It is to end the season. This you're going to get into the playoffs or not on this one decision.
God.
Okay, you got 5 minutes to play. You have to pick one of these two dudes as your small forward for those last 5 minutes. Are you taking Dante Cunningham or Solomon Hill? Who are you taking?
God. I guess I would take Solomon Hill just because Dante Cunningham seems to have some of that irrational confidence in it. Like, I don't mind the corner three, but he'll put up some shots early in the shot clock with like Drew and AD on the court with him,
mm-hmm.
and you're just like, I mean, he really thinks he's one of the best players on the court.
He's got the green
at
light.
Least with Solomon, yeah, I mean, at least with Solomon Hill, he's been so bad that he's been beaten back into reality, and I think he would pass up that shot. And even if we get a more contested one for AD or Drew, it'd be better. So I guess it would be Solomon Hill, but man, the fact that I'm saying that reluctantly about a guy we just gave $50 million to is really sad. How about you? Who would you pick?
I'm taking Solomon Hill. Like Dante gives all the effort in the world, and sometimes he can knock down that 3-point shot, but Dante's always mixing it up and fouling the crap out of people, and his aggression results in absolutely nothing ever. And I have actually seen Solomon Hill have his aggression result in something good. Almost as often it results in something bad. but at least I've seen him be able to pressure people and cause deflections and really makes a somewhat of a difference on that side of the ball. So I'm taking Solomon Hill every time.
So let me ask you this. Over under 20 more games that Solomon Hill starts this year, would you take the over or the under?
I would take the over.
Okay, so how do you see this playing out with, I mean, you obviously think Solomon Hill is going to get that job back at some point and keep it. How do you see this small forward position playing out for the rest of the year?
I think that Tyreek Evans is going to come back, be showcased for however many games they either before they either trade him or he inevitably gets injured again. So 20 games. they then go back to Solomon Hill and give him the shot, and he gets like another stretch. Then they go back to Dante, and Dante gets his little stretch, and then they go back to Solomon to try to see what they got, and that's the end of the season.
What do you think Solomon Hill's field goal percentage is right now?
Right now?
Yeah.
Well, I looked at it like three before the last two wins, but I don't think he made a whole lot of shot, so I would guess it's probably 31%.
Oh, you shot way too high, my friend.
What is
31%? That's his 2-point percentage. So maybe that's what you're thinking of. No, he's a 29.5% shooter and 27% from three. But he is giving you those 2.3 assists a game, and that's what you said before the season you wanted. So
I did. I want to. I do actually like his passing ability.
Yeah. Yeah, he's second on the team in steals, him and Galloway. So, yeah, it's funny. We brought in another guy.
Is he as bad offensively as he seems? Is he really?
Yes, and he always has been. He had his Willie Green moment in the playoffs, and we paid him based off of that and that alone. Hey, we just signed, or I guess we're signing Anthony Brown today, and I was like, I know that name from somewhere.
But for his career, he shot 40%. Like, he's not a 30% shooter for his career. Like, how did he shoot 40%?
40% what, from the field?
Yeah.
I mean, he'll get there again. I mean, that's not hard to do when you're shooting 4.4 shots a game. I mean, he's shooting so few, but yeah, I mean, he's a 38 to 41%. He's a bad offensive player, and he was always bad, and he'll always be bad. And whatever. What I was saying is, so this guy Anthony Brown we signed, I know I remembered the name and heard of him somewhere, so I was like, did I write about him?
He was a Laker.
And yeah, he was a Laker, but in February of last year, I wrote my piece, the finding the out-of-nowhere 3-and-D small forward. And it was basically trying to find the next Damari Carroll or, you know, whatever. And my whole premise was I got to find guys who have done nothing, because people will say, well, let's get Jay Crowder, but it's already too late to get Jay Crowder. So I got to find the guy who's terrible right now and hope to maybe hit. And I did five guys in that piece. Three of them, one was James Ennis, who we signed a couple months later.
Mm-hmm.
Another was Solomon Hill, who we signed a couple months later. And the third was Anthony Brown, who we just signed today. So if in case you're wondering, the two left that Dell still has to cross off his list that I gave him is Sir Dominic Poynter and Cleanthony Early.
Okay.
But the reason I say this is because Ennis we got for the minimum. Brown we got for the minimum. Sir Anthony Poynter we could get for maybe a white glove. And Cleanthony Early, I'm sure we could get with no trouble whatsoever. The one guy on that list, and remember, I had them all at the same point in February of last year as far as having the same value around the league, is Solomon Hill, who somehow a couple of months later got $50 million. This is going to continue to drive me insane, but with the Anthony Brown signing today, it just reinforced this idea of I don't know how that happened, but God, it's worse than even I could have imagined, because I would have thought he would have at least been the starter for this year and next year until they figured out he was terrible. But now we've got Dante Cunningham getting 43 minutes in a game because of what our small forward position is. So that's it. You say something good about Solomon Hill now.
Say something good about Solomon Hill? I already did. I said that he can impact the game defensively in a positive way.
Oh, okay.
Like, I mean, like I said, Dante Cunningham is like the prime energy guy who gives you actually nothing for that energy. He just looks like he's playing really hard, but it just doesn't. He doesn't do anything. Like, if he guards a small forward, it's not effective. And Solomon Hill, he can actually be effective guarding that small forward or switching on the perimeter. He's actually effective at that. That's what I'll say.
So do you believe now what I told you in the off season that the coaches love them some Dante Cunningham?
Oh, God.
I mean, he got the most minutes in the Charlotte game yesterday. He led the team in minutes. the team with Anthony Davis and a guard that was red hot and Jrue Holiday, and Dante Cunningham leads the team in minutes. What do you think they see that we don't? Or is it just a lesser of two evils thing? Because, I mean, remember, yeah, Buddy is smaller, but Buddy basically, what did he play, 5 minutes, 8 minutes, and Dante Cunningham's playing 43? What do they see that we don't with Dante?
I think he brings them coffee every morning.
Like, he makes it or he picks it up?
Oh, I'm sure he home brews it. He has a hand grinder. He finds exactly what each of their individual blends are, makes it himself, hand carries it to them. There's a guy I used to work for who did that every day at the store I worked at when I was working in a grocery store. He would handcraft his boss's coffee and bring it to him every morning as the biggest suck up on the planet. So that's
Did he write inspirational like DJ Khaled like messages on the cups?
No.
Do you know who DJ Khaled is, by the way?
No, I have no idea who that is.
Okay. Well, he's got major keys for you. But okay. So that's really it. You think it's coffee?
I just think it's that they actually sit there and think like he is their prime backup power forward and small forward. They've settled on it. It's freaking crazy. Like, tell me any forward in the league who in 43 minutes of gameplay wouldn't grab 8 rebounds and 6 points. Like, and that's a good game for him. 8 rebounds and 6 points. I was like, wow, that was like a Dante Cunningham good game.
Yeah, he didn't foul out either. He got close. He dipped that toe in the water, but
he did smack someone in the face. That was kind of fun.
Do you think that if we really looked at the other 29 teams, we could find a worse position on any team in the NBA
as far as the
starter and backup?
I'm sure we could if we looked at like the Brooklyn Nets.
You think so?
I think so. I bet we could.
I mean, the starter and backup would both have god awful, and I don't know if any team, like I was thinking maybe Philadelphia point guard, but I would take Sergio Rodriguez at point guard, you know, as a better point guard than either Hill or Cunningham as a small forward.
Yeah.
I would really be curious. I would, if you guys get a chance, leave a comment or send one our way of who you think is a worse position group in the NBA than what the Pelicans have. But I don't know. Pick a position on the Nets.
I was thinking either shooting guard or power forward, because I don't remember even who their starting power forward is.
Oh, you got Trevor Booker, who's actually leading the league in defensive RPM. You got Trevor Booker. You got Louis Scola.
Oh, come on. That baller. Lee Scola has been done for years.
I would say, yeah, there would be a toss-up. Because they're shooting guards, you're looking at Sean Kilpatrick and Randy Foy. But Kilpatrick's actually having a fairly respectable season.
Yeah, so I remember there was a tweet earlier this season from someone covering the Nets, and they're like, the reason why the Nets are so good, Sean Kilpatrick. And it was like, 15 points and 4 rebounds and like an assist and a half at the timer. And I'm like, really? Like,
yeah, but would you not kill for that from our small forward? But this is what I'm saying is like, all you would have to do is have a competent NBA body and your position is better than the Pelicans small forward position. I really think it's that bad.
Who's their small forward? Is Hollis Jefferson playing or is he not?
Yeah, Hollis Jefferson's playing. I mean, he's shooting as bad as you would think he is, putting up about 7 points a game. He could hit his free throws.
He could hit his free throws
for some reason.
I can't wait to see the Nets come play us. Because, like, can you imagine the Solomon Hill Hollis Jefferson battle we could have out there?
Oh, don't leave Bojan Bunjanović out of it. He's actually, I mean, him and I don't know which one you want to consider the small forward, but. Him and Hollis Jefferson are both starting there on the wings. And Bogdanovich is,
well, he's got to be the shooting guard then, so he can't count.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's bad to the point where I got so hysterical the other day that I basically tweeted out a Rudy Gay trade. Let's just do it. Let's just go in, Ryan. Let's just go get Rudy Gay and never have to see Dante Cunningham again.
I saw the tweet, and I gave it all the dignity it deserved. I did not respond to it. I did not acknowledge. Other people sent it to me, saying that, hey, maybe what do you got to say about it? And I just pretended.
You still
didn't
respond.
But, you know, why are we, like talking so much bad stuff? We just won two games in a row, man.
Well, now we're going to get all good. Now that we got the small forward out of the way, it's like when my mom used to make a good meal with a salad. I would just shove the salad down my throat. Now it's time to talk all good, which I think we've got. We always skip Anthony Davis, but F it, I'm going to do it again. We got to talk about Jrue Holiday because I expected a ton of rust and not much good play from him. And I still think he's rusty, but, man, I think he's been good these two games.
So here's the one thing I feel is different about Jrue than the past couple of years. I really feel like he is just 100% calm at every moment he's out there, and he's just being a surgeon. Like, there have been games where I've felt in the last year and the year before that where he would be, like, pressing. He'd be trying too hard to get things done. He'd be maybe a little bit of ahead of where he needed to be and be trying to force plays. And these two games, it feels like he's just like, I'll take what they give me, and if they don't give me anything good, I will find a way to get back out to the perimeter and get the ball rolling somewhere else and whatever. Like, he feels unflappable, almost like he's realized that this is a game. It doesn't really matter as much as other things in the world. Maybe I'm contributing too much to his mental state because of what's happened with him recently. But he just feels like he's a surgeon and he's picking people apart. It's great.
Yeah, I kind of read it another way. I read it as the last couple of years, it was one of those situations where if you gave the ball up or if you didn't take your shot here, you didn't know if you would get it again. I mean, there was think about the guys we had and how many high usage guys we've had on this team. And, you know, it was a your turn, my turn, and, oh, we got to make sure to get this guy his shots because he's happy. Now, even though you feel that way, the crazy thing is his usage percentage is it at an all-time high, and it's miles higher than it's been over his career with the Pelicans. So, yeah, he's taken his time, but it's because he knows that at the end of the day, he's going to be a major part of the offense and doesn't have to worry about getting all these other high-usage guys the ball. So I just think that this is naturally, you know, more of what we should see from Davis and Holiday when they're together. I mean, but yeah, I agree. I mean, there's just so many things. Tim Frazier has been trying his butt off, but it's crazy because you see Jrue Holiday do things that Frazier just can't, and he seems to do it with 1/10 the effort. And like I said, I still think he's rusty. I think his jump shot is pretty flat. I think it's coming up short late in games because he's tired. I think he's 80% of what he's going to be once he gets into shape. So that actually gives me some optimism moving forward, because I think once he gets into shape, sky's the limit, even though they're not going to have, you know, studs at the small forward and center position in that starting lineup. I think him and AD are just going to wreck things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was wondering what you thought about the fact that Holiday and Frazier were being used together to close that game. Do you think that's just a matchup thing, that they felt they wanted Frazier out there to chase Kemba?
I just don't know what the other options really were. I mean, Terrence Jones was playing terribly that game, so you pretty much, well, at least the coaches felt that they had to close the game with AD and Dante Cunningham at the 4 and 5. So now you got to play three guards. You're gonna play Drew. Galloway was hot, so it basically came down to Frazier or Etuan Moore, who again was off that game.
Yeah.
So I think they just went with more offensive creation. It's curious to me, like, what Frazier's role would be if Evans was back and they were actually playing him. I agree with you. I think they're basically going to play him and try to get as many wins out of him as they can before they move him, if there's any offers. But it basically came down to Frazier and Moore, and Moore was off that game. But I don't think that they're, like I said, I really think game to game, Drew and AD are the only guys that are definitely going to close, and the other three spots are wide open.
Yeah, completely matchup dependent, I think. Yeah.
Did you feel like Kemba was as aggressive as he could have been in that game? Like, I felt there were so many times where he would get in the pick and roll and then he would eventually give the ball up. And I, like, breathed a huge sigh of relief. And I was actually, you know, I was hoping Batum would get the ball more. And, you know, anytime anybody else touched, I was happy. Do you think Kemba was as aggressive as you expected him to be against our guards?
No, I didn't think he had as much of an impact as I expected that he was going to. But they were shading him pretty heavily. And anytime I was actually surprised the number of times where he actually drew the switch, because the Pelicans were switching on him every single time. And he would, instead of trying to take advantage of a slightly larger player by getting by them, he would just find the wide open big man shooter. And, you know, it works sometimes. Their big men were hitting shots every so often, but I just feel like it would have been much more effective if he had just torched whoever he got switched onto.
Well, and by the way, Anthony Davis is averaging 32 points per game on 22 shots and 11.5 rebounds and 3 blocks and 2 steals.
Yeah, he's getting 11 free throw attempts a game. 11 free throw attempts per game. I think last year we got 11 free throw attempts per game with the whole team playing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not much more than that outside of him. Drew's getting 4.5. He's not making them. I guess some of those are a little skewed by the end of game free throws where they're purposely fouling. But yeah, I thought in the Charlotte game particularly, they just settled for jumpers way too much. And I still would love to have one guard or wing player who just attacks the basket and draws contact and gets to the line more often. I think that's something that when the jumpers were off, which they were until the third, but didn't they start the fourth quarter something like 7 of 8 from three?
Yes.
Like they got crazy hot in the fourth.
And came back.
Yeah, and stole that game away. But yeah, I still think that's one thing that's missing, is just to get a guard who, when you're struggling, could get you to the free throw line. And we had him, but we released him today in Archie Goodwin. What are they thinking?
Right. I'm sorry to all those people out there who were sure that Archie Goodwin was going to come in and be our athletic slasher. But yeah, that didn't really work out. I gotta keep talking about Anthony Davis here for a second, though, because we haven't really said that much about it. Like, his best season drawing free throws was 7. That was last year. Before that, his best was like 6.5 per game. He's drawing 11 this year. It feels to me like he's actually got his man's frame finally out there on the basketball court. Like, when he gets hit now, he doesn't seem to go flying or lose all of his balance. He has figured out how to draw contact, hit the little floaters, and still power through people a lot more. He feels much stronger than he has in the past few seasons. Am I just being stupid about that? Was he this strong last year, or is it something that's legitimate?
No, I mean, he's definitely put together a lot better in finishing through contact and even seeking it out. My big question is just, is he going to be able to keep that up? I mean, they're basically forced to play him 38 minutes a game. When a game's close, it's usually closer to 40 and sometimes over. I think when Gentry got here, he actually wanted to reduce Davis's minutes and, you know, play more like Golden State. But obviously with all the injuries and his job essentially on the line, he can't do that. But I definitely think he's stronger, but I also think just his usage is way higher. His minutes are way higher. I'm just curious if he could keep that up, but I'm actually hoping, you know, Holiday will be able to take a lot of that off him, because I mean, there's even little things. If you watch Anthony Davis for a full game, how many times can you remember him in either of those games actually running up the court? Doesn't it seem like he's always just jogging and making it up offensively as like the fourth or fifth guy there? And like all this stuff about us pushing and, you know, wanting to get a shot off in 10 to 12 seconds, like that's all gone. And it's basically because our deer of a big man isn't running anymore because he physically can't, because he's got to do so much on both sides of the ball and he's got to play 38 to 40 minutes just for them to have a chance to win. So I think that's a little unfortunate, and I hope they could get him more breathers now that Drew's back and they could run the offense through him.
Right. So let's talk about the Portland game really quick, just so we at least mention it. Do you think our team's better than Portland, or do you think we caught Portland on a down night? What did you think about that game?
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I always thought Portland was going to take a huge step back this year, similar to that Phoenix team a couple years ago. And they're basically a team that Lillard is always going to be Lillard, but I think the key to their team is not letting McCollum get hot. I think he's really streaky, and when he's hot and now you're trying to slow down both of their guards, then you'll just see those guys go off for 60, 70 points. And there's nothing you could do about it, and they stretch your defense. So I thought the key to that game was actually slowing McCollum a bit, and I think they did. I think Galloway gets some credit on the offensive end, but I really think he played well defensively, and, you know, Frazier as well. Frazier is really hurt defensively when, guards cut down the lane and his size just isn't able to deflect any passes or keep guys, but the Portland guards were more than happy just being jump shooters and not really beating him up. Really played to Frazier's advantage. So I actually think Portland's a team that we match up really well with. And yeah, at both teams at full strength on a neutral court, I would actually take the Pelicans in the series.
Well, you know, they didn't have Al Farouq Aminu.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the god. I know that.
So at any point in that game, did you say, Frazier, calm down, dude? Like, were you wishing he would, like, dial it back a second? Or did you like what he... Because he was all over them. And especially Lillard.
Yeah, I loved it. And, like...
Yeah.
It kind of actually frustrated me a little bit because I'm sitting there saying, so when your best friend comes into town, you play like this, but the last four or five games, you know, you're not going to play with that kind of intensity and all-out effort. I don't know. When I see that happen, you know, when a guy has to get inspired by Stephen A. Smith or his best friend coming to town, like, find a way to do that for you every night. I mean, that's what made Kevin Garnett. I just actually frustrated me a little bit because I was like, wow, Frazier's playing good tonight, playing with a lot of energy. And then I started wondering where that was the last four or five games. So hopefully when he's not playing 30 minutes a night, he'll be able to do that in 10, 12 minute sparks. But yeah, I thought he actually he brought a lot to the team on that night, and that was the guy we'd kind of seen in the first week or two.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll admit I was a little worried that at some point Lillard was going to just start bombing, and he actually had a stretch where he hit a few, but the Pelicans answered every single one of them. Like that game never felt to me like Portland ever really had a chance. It felt like we had that under wraps, and I wasn't really that worried. So that was refreshing. Refreshing.
Yeah, what do you take? That was kind of the first game we saw. Now with Drew back, the buddy minutes getting reduced drastically. I mean, I don't know about you, but I felt like offensively he was just starting to get a little bit of confidence. And even in that Portland game, like he took a shot off of a pick and roll that was like a nice little 18 footer that looked so smooth. He had a little corner three. Like I felt like he was starting to get into a place offensively where he's starting to get some confidence, and now his minutes are getting pulled back drastically. What are your feelings about Buddy basically having to sacrifice his minutes now that Drew's back?
I think it's kind of stupid, and I have no idea why you would select to play Dante Cunningham 43 minutes and not make sure Buddy gets at least 15. Like, I think that is the bottom threshold. In reality, if you want to develop a player who you think is important to you, you got to give him at least like 15 minutes every single game to let him learn what he's doing and figure out what he's doing and get in a rhythm and just get familiar with the team. And like a 6-minute stint, that's nothing. Like you're going to get what? Like maybe 6 touches during the 6 minutes? How is that going to teach you anything?
It's terrible.
Yeah. It annoys me, especially because really, like, we are making a decision here that Dante Cunningham needs to play 75% of every game, which is obvious bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, Cunningham, Hill, Galloway, none of them did anything of substance in that game, but yet they got, was that 63 minutes, Buddy. Goes 2 of 2, scores 5 points again, a nice little mid-range off of a screen, and then a corner three. Goes 2 of 2, scores 5 points,
yeah.
And is never really seen from again, and then, you know, gets even less time in the next game. I don't fully get it. I understand winning now over developing for the future if you're Alvin Gentry and your job's on the line, but I guess I don't understand the argument for how Dante Cunningham or Solomon Hill help you win now any more than Buddy Hield does.
Yeah. Quick, who has a better shooting percentage, Buddy Hield or Dante Cunningham?
Like, what, true shooting percentage?
Just field goal percentage.
Field goal percentage?
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I don't know. I have no idea. I would say too hard to figure out why you're asking me this question, but I'm going to go with Dante,
no,
but I think they're both terrible.
But Buddy is 38% and Dante is 37%. It's not even that we're making a decision here because Dante Cunningham is an efficient scorer, even if he gives you nothing else. Like, we're making a decision between Dante Cunningham scores less points per shot than Solomon Hill. We just talked about how Solomon Hill is an awful, awful offensive player. We know Dante Cunningham actually hit some threes sometimes. He still managed to score less points per shot than Solomon Hill.
Yeah, and it's not like he's a good passer. As you've chronicled, he hasn't been a good defender this year.
He's not a good rebounder.
It's just... No, but I'm telling you, these coaches absolutely love him. Every metric that you look at, I mean, offensive rating of 91, defensive rating of 109, which is just beyond awful. But now that I say that, Buddy Hield's even worse.
I'm not saying Buddy's great, but at least, like, Buddy has a chance to turn into something. We know what Dante is. This is what Dante is.
Yeah. Well, this is the perils of fans want to scream into their computers that Gentry and Del Dem should be fired. Well, this is kind of you reap what you sow, because if they really are on the hot seat, this is what you're going to get. You're going to get more Dante Cunningham and Solomon Hill playing as opposed to Buddy, even though, like I said, I thought he was starting to kind of turn it on a little bit and get some confidence. And with another ball handler, like, to me, that's when you want Buddy playing more, because now you could just play him to his strengths. He doesn't have to create offense and all this other stuff he was having to do when Drew wasn't there. I mean, now he should just be on the court with other good players and getting the occasional spot up three. And if somebody runs out, then he could drive by him and hit somebody else with an open shot. Like, this is when Buddy should be playing more, not less. But it is what it is. You have a coach and a GM with their feet to the fire, so they're going to do whatever they think gets them more wins today. I don't get it, but this is obviously what they think it is.
Yeah. All right, so you ready to talk about what's coming up?
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, another 4-0 stretch coming.
Four and oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, we have four games before the next podcast, and Turkey Day in there, too. I hope everybody enjoys their Turkey Day. So Tuesday, they play in Atlanta. They come home and play Wednesday night back home against Minnesota. And then Friday, they take off and they fly to Portland, and they get to play in the Rose Garden, which is always rough. And then they fly to Dallas on the way home and stop there. So at Atlanta versus Minnesota, at Portland, at Dallas, which team do you want to talk about?
I'm just really interested in Portland, in Minnesota, just because they're the opposite of what you would think a Tom Thibodeau team would be, where their offense has been fantastic this year. Their defense has still been bad. I don't fully get it. I know that Andrew Wiggins has been getting to the line quite a bit, and, you know, he's actually been pretty efficient this year. He's somehow hitting 50% of his threes, which isn't going to last. I mean, you look at it, it's insane. Towns, Levine, and Wiggins, like, none of those guys you would think of as shooters versus guys that we have on our team. Like, most people think of Buddy as a shooter. You know, even guys like Moore and Galloway are thought of as more shooters than Wiggins and Levine. Wiggins is shooting, and these are on good amount of attempts. He's shooting 50% from three on nearly four attempts. Levine is shooting 44 on nearly seven attempts per game. And Anthony Towns is shooting four a game, and he's at 42%. Like, none of those guys are shooters, yet they're just absolutely drilling them from deep. And those three guys right there are giving you 66 points per game and basically carrying the offense in a very efficient way. And then you just have a bunch of role players around them. But despite all of Wiggins and Levine's athleticism, Karl Anthony Towns supposedly being the next god in the center, Gorgie Jang, and then Tom Thibodeau, you have all these components, and yet their defense is still really bad. So I find that curious. I mean, teams are getting to the line a ton against them. They're shooting an incredible 52% on their two-point shots against Minnesota, and not much rim protection there. So it's a very confusing team to me, and I'd be curious if you have any theories of why they're essentially the opposite of what we thought they would be.
Well, I mean, there's always the fact that going from a really, really – they were, I think, second from the – they were a worse defensive team than us last year, if I remember right, which is saying something.
Mm-hmm.
So turning that around, it's a really, really gnarly job, and – I don't like Karl Anthony Towns. I've watched him a couple times because I'm feeling very resentful about the way people are crowning him over Anthony Davis as the next big man, who's amazing. very, very resentful about that. And I will say that Karl Anthony Towns feels smoother offensively than Davis. He's probably not more effective, but he feels smoother. so I can see why people are like that. Dude doesn't know what to do in a pick and roll. He really doesn't. Carl Anthony Towns might be the next great offensive center. It doesn't mean he knows jack about defense, and last year he certainly didn't. Zach LaVine, who I actually thought looked really good offensively last year in the minutes where he got to play shooting guard, I remember them, our team, picking him apart on defense last year. Like, had no, he would run, like, this guy is 6'6", and he would run into a pick and fall on his butt. Like, he was just terrible at navigating screens. So, do you think Thibodeau's going to be able to come in and tell that guy, hey, make sure you can stay on your feet when you run through a screen and be able to enforce that? That's a guy who's not interested. If you're going to just die on a pick, that, you're never going to be a great defender. You got to at least try. So, I mean, that's my take. That's the best I could do for you. Like, do you think with all the athleticism this team has, they'd at least be able to do like the Thunder model defense from, you know, a few years back, where none of them were actually that good of defenders except for Ibaka, but they were all so long and so quick that they just, I remember I wrote an article about teams that had the opponents had the highest expected of field goal based on the shots they were taking. They had the highest expected field goal percentages, and the Thunder were a freak because they had like the second highest expected percentage for their opponents. Like, their opponents got great shots, but they shot them at like the second worst in the league. And it was just because they were so long and they were bothered by those athletes. You'd think they'd be able to do the same thing here, but it's not working out that way. And then I also, when I did the preview for this team, I just almost laughed at their bench. I'm sorry, their bench is garbage. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, Rubio gone, that's kind of made them junk, you know, put some stuff where they didn't want it to be. But I don't know, those three just might be so good. I mean, the one thing that really scares me is they're second in the league in offensive rebounding percentage, I think. I don't know. I mean, do you play big against them? Because Omer is not going to be out there with Carl Anthony Towns.
No.
You know, do you, I guess maybe you could stick him on Jang and then have somebody else there grabbing the rebounds. But, yeah, that one is going to be tough. Do you go small? I mean, if you go smaller with Jones and AD or Cunningham and AD, like, they could just absolutely own the boards against you. So I think that's going to be the place where, you know, they obviously just can't let Wiggins get to the line at will. And then they're also going to have to find a way to control the boards. But I think that their guards should be able to get a lot of open looks and go, the Pelicans guard should be able to get a lot of open looks and go get off in that game. I really think it's going to be whether or not the Pelicans could keep Minnesota off the glass. And I think it's going to be a pretty tall task.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Wiggins is aggressive going to the basket, and that create, like, we've seen this before when Tyreek was around, he might miss those shots, but it's going to make your life a lot easier to rebound him when everybody's stumbling around trying to help on that guy. And that Towns and Jang have been just feasting on it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's mine. Who do you find interested and want to talk about in this week?
So I'll admit I'm really, really tempted to bring up Dallas because of how bad they've been this year. But if I talk up the fact of how bad they are, then we're inevitably going to lose to them and feel really awful about it. So I'm going to not talk about Dallas and get everybody's hopes up, because nothing's worse than losing to a really bad team. So I'm going to talk about Atlanta. Because honestly, Atlanta, I thought what they did over the summer, I mean, I've never been a huge Teague fan, but it felt like just the depth loss, being able to do Teague and Schroeder is better than just having Schroeder and their backup point guard, whoever it is right now, because Jarrett Jack got released by them. Malcolm Delaney is their backup point guard right now. I can't even tell you who Malcolm Delaney is. So
yeah, and, I think he was on season 3 of Will and Grace, but yeah.
Okay, but I mean, like Dwight Howard, like I didn't think he was done, but I didn't feel like he could contribute mightily to a really good team anymore. And clearly I'd been wrong about that, and I thought the loss of Al Horford was going to hurt them a lot. And apparently they're 9-4, and they haven't had, like, a very easy schedule. I mean, it hasn't been super difficult. They're probably middle of the pack as far as schedule goes. But they're 9-4, and Dwight Howard has been playing really well for them. Paul Millsap is basically now the featured forward, and he's been just an amazing offensive force for them. It's just they're once again exceeding expectations in a pretty nice way, and you got to give all credit to Budenholzer to be able to pull that kind of thing. They literally went from pure ball movement, pure moving the ball around the edges, lots of switching and pick and rolls and fade, pick and pops where guys are going to the edges, and now half the time they're just flat, clear off to one side, pick and roll with either Schroeder Millsap or Schroeder Howard. Major change.
Yeah, and I mean, Korver has a bit of a renaissance, and I again, this is another team I'm curious how we play them. I think when their lineup is in, I think we go pretty conventional with AD and Ashik. But if, let's say, comes down to the end of the game and Howard's going to be in there and we put Davis on Howard, who on this Pelicans team would you trust to guard Millsap? Do you think Hill could slow him down at all?
I think Hill is your best option. I don't know if he'll be. Millsap is a really underrated, really good, multifaceted scorer. So, you know, you're not going to be able to stop a guy like that all the time. But Hill, I think, would be our best chance. He's going to get crushed on the boards.
Yeah, I think that'll be.
And I don't like a Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis line. Like, I just feel like Dwight Howard is a powerful dude. He's going to throw Davis around a little bit, even though Davis is bigger now. Don't like it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting matchup. I have no clue. I mean, if you have a Sheik in there, though, unless you run with three guards, which actually wouldn't be against. Bazemore is pretty small for a small forward. He's more of a prototypical shooting guard size. So I could see running a lot of three-guard lineups, and then that would allow you to have AD and Omer in there without absolutely killing your spacing. So that's a possible one.
Well, you know what's going to happen, though, right?
Luke Babbitt game? No, I don't know.
No, I mean, AD is going to be on Dwight Howard, and Dante Cunningham's going to be out there for 48 minutes.
Oh, well, we could only hope. that would be pretty sad. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I would say that's pretty possible.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to look at Millsap, and they're going to look at Dante, and they're like, hey, they're the same height. Oh god. Depressed you.
To me this week it'll be pretty interesting because I think a lot of our advantages are actually in the backcourt coming up, so it'll be interesting to see where starting on Tuesday there's three games in 4 days, and then, you know, the other quote-unquote off day is Thanksgiving, so it'll just be curious to see how Jrue Holiday comes back. And, I mean, do you expect him to be in the starting lineup at any point this week, or do you think they'll continue bringing him off the bench for all four of these games?
Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he came in after Thanksgiving as the starting point guard. I think they're going to give him like a week's worth of time as the backup. See how he starts to feel tired or needs more work, and if he looks the way he's been looking, he will be the starter after Thanksgiving. I don't think there's any way you can avoid that without looking like a moron. And optics matter to this team right now. They've got to not look like morons because of all the issues they're having and the hot seats that are out there.
I really think this will be an interesting week because I think the advantage in all the games except for Portland is actually in the backcourt. And I think this is a pretty deep and good backcourt, and they have guys where if one guy's off, they could try another one. Like they did in the Charlotte game with Moore and Galloway, but you're not, it's not one of those situations where Etuan Moore is making $18 million a year, so you feel like you have to play him or his ego is going to get hurt if he's not playing. You just have a bunch of guys who understand that whoever's on that night is going to get the minutes, and I actually like our backcourt in three of the four matchups this week, but they're going to have to play basically the way that they have been playing, and then Anthony Davis is going to have to carry the entire front. Who would you say is the second best player on this team that is listed as a forward or center?
Omer Asik.
Man. Yeah, that's I might agree, and that's pretty sad. So, the backcourt's going to have to carry this team for a little while until they trade for Rudy Gay.
God. You want to hear something really creepy?
Oh, all the time.
So, Jeff Teague, point guard for the Atlanta Hawks last year, he averaged 15.7 points per game and 5.9 assists per game last season. Dennis Schroeder, point guard of the Atlanta Hawks this season, he is averaging 15.7 points per game and 5.9 assists per game.
The system, man.
It's the exact same stat line. Now, Teague did play a minute and a half less to get the same stat line, but still, like Schroeder's shooting 45% and 39% from the field, and Teague last season was 44% and 40% from the field. They both draw.
But one is younger, so he's going to get better. All the younger guys get better, Ryan.
That's right.
Always.
It's true. Schroeder could get better. I'm not going to. But I just think that is absolutely crazy. I had not realized how remarkably similar these two guys are. The only thing that Teague really has on Schroeder, and you can basically tie this down to experience, is Schroeder is throwing the ball away, a half a time more per game than Teague was. I guess Teague is a better thief, too. Steals per game. Teague had that, too. Still, it doesn't feel like much of a downgrade, does it?
No. I mean, I think what you're saying, though, is right, is the downgrade is in the number two. But, I mean, whenever you elevate the second string guy to first string.
Yeah.
Even if he is as good, what you're talking about is the downgrade that you have now on your second unit, and I think that's where Atlanta's somewhat struggling. So, we got all that, plus we've got Anthony Brown getting thrown in the mix for the Pelicans. He'll probably start a game by the end of the week.
No, he won't. Dante Cunningham's got it on lockdown. Lockdown!
He's gonna collapse. There's somebody, Anthony Brown. I like when you Google a guy's name and he's definitely the first one that comes up. Like, Anthony Brown for Congress is the first thing that comes up no matter what. Whenever you tap in Anthony Brown, and then there's a Cowboys player who is covering Steve Smith today who's named Anthony Brown that's not happy. It's just, it's too much. I want to know more about our Anthony Brown.
Right.
I'm sure he's going to be here for the long haul if what happened to Archie Goodwin is any implication. But any final words for the Archie Goodwin era? What memories will you have?
I'm just going to remember that he had a game where he got some free throws. That was pretty cool. I'm not going to remember him in 2 years that he's even on the team. Actually, I'll remember that because I'm stupid and I pay too much attention to this stuff, but like, he's gonna go. He's gonna have less games than you know, Marquinhos from Brazil had.
Oof.
Arvidas Maciauskas had way more games than Archie. Like, you guys remember that guy? Right.
Yeah, he's this year's Nate Walters.
That's right, Nate Walters.
These are the guys in Pelicans history. So, yeah, four games. Oh, man. I'm pretty sure I remember he had a pretty hot girlfriend. But, so yeah, this is it. We got four games now.
Mm-hmm.
Starting to try to claw our way back to 500, which, by the way, like, just thinking about it, really depresses you how big that hole is that they dug themselves. Because, like, I feel like we just had a good week, and it was a 2-1 week, and I'd love to take a 2-1 week every week. It would take us a month and a half just to get back to 500 if we just had a 6 straight 2-1 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, just
think
about
how long.
If they had managed to just bank 2 wins during that stretch, right now we would be sitting at 6-8. And that, that is fine. They just had to win 2 games.
Yeah. Yeah, but like I said at the beginning of the podcast, I feel like we had games stolen from us, and I feel like we got one back in that Charlotte game because I definitely didn't feel like that was one we were supposed to win. So I'll figure I'll cancel that one in the Phoenix game out.
Okay.
We should have gone 1-1 in those 2 games, and they did. So now we just got to cancel a couple of those other garbage ones out. But, yeah, 4 games. We went through the schedule. We got 3 and 4 nights, and then actually, what, 4 and 6 or
yeah,
4 and 5?
4 and 6.
4 and 6. So what are you saying? What do they walk out with record-wise this week?
I don't think they're taking Atlanta in Atlanta or Portland in Portland. So I'm going 2-2.
Yeah. I'll do the Schwann, and I'll do the mystery of, well, they'll go 2-2. But one of those wins will be Atlanta.
Okay.
So now I sound like, ooh, I'm going with what you thought I was going with record-wise, but I mixed it up as far as who they beat. Magistical Schwann.
Are you trying to mock me?
No, I actually envy. I envy because everybody's doing it now. But, no, I want you to watch Westworld. I finally caved in, and I watched your Game of Thrones stuff. So you got to give Westworld a shot, and everybody on this podcast shouted him to do the same because he has not watched a single episode yet.
I haven't even paid attention to what it is other than it's supposedly sci-fi.
Very sci-fi-ish, yes.
All right, so thanks everyone for listening to In the Know, and hopefully we'll be able to have a nice, happy podcast next Sunday.
3-1, like I said.
What?